Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this. Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's W-I-X.com.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
A short-lived ceasefire. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Gina Cervetti. Glad you're with us. Friday, August 1st. Welcome aboard, and here's what we have for you this hour.
A three-day break in fighting agreed to by Israel and Hamas is in jeopardy. We'll have the latest from Gaza City in just a moment.
The Labor Department releases the July jobs report today. Will the news help stocks recover from yesterday's big slide?
The CDC is warning Americans to avoid traveling to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone because of the Ebola outbreak, which has taken more than 700 lives.
And the latest frontier in cybersecurity, smartphones.
You know, both researchers and hackers have realized that that phone you carry around that's in your pocket, in your purse, sort of with you at all times, is really more of a computer masquerading as a phone these days. And it presents some very unique security challenges that are different from your typical computer.
Wall Street Journal reporter Dana Yadrin previews the Black Hat Conference in Las Vegas, where hackers will demonstrate some very unsettling things. He's here later in the hour. It was a short-lived ceasefire. Reuters is reporting that Israeli shelling near the southern Gaza town of Rafah killed at least 40 people today. A three-day ceasefire was supposed to be in effect at 1 o'clock this morning Eastern time. That was 8 o'clock local time in Gaza. Israel accused Hamas and other Palestinian militant groups of violating the U.S. and U.N.-mediated truce, but did not elaborate, amid Israeli media reports that gunmen had fired at Israeli soldiers in the Rafah area. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon had announced the truce in New Delhi yesterday.
It is a lull of opportunity, a moment for the sides and the different factions to be able to come together with the State of Israel in an effort to try to address ways to find a sustainable ceasefire.
Effort on the word try. Meanwhile, Israel, Hamas, and other Palestinian factions were supposed to travel to Cairo for negotiations aimed at building the ceasefire into a more lasting truce. In Gaza yesterday, by the way, fighting raged for a 24th day. One report says militants fired 99 rockets toward Israel, and a mortar attack hit an army staging area near the border, wounding several soldiers. In addition, Israeli strikes hit about 100 targets in Gaza. International investigators trying to recover the remaining victims from Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in eastern Ukraine have reached the crash site for the first time in nearly a week. Meanwhile, Ukrainian lawmakers approved legislation allowing hundreds of foreign experts to arm themselves and carry special equipment for their investigations. And developing this morning, word that violence has broken out there, about 15 miles from the crash site. To Moscow now, and Wall Street Journal reporter Lucas Albert, who's on the T-Mobile hotline. Lucas, you say that 2 weeks after the plane was brought down, security remains the biggest problem.
There's been consistent fighting in the area. There have been efforts. The government had initially said that they were going to try and set a zone of 40 kilometers where there would be no fighting. But it's seemingly the battlefront has moved. It's shifted. There's been fighting. Doesn't seem immediately right where the plane has landed, but, you know, in the area and access to the area from where the investigators have sort of set up their base has been tenuous at best. The roads are, pretty a lot of activity on them militarily.
Yeah. All right. So what are investigators doing at this point, 2 weeks after?
What happened yesterday was that they managed to get like a preliminary team there to kind of assess the situation on, really, I guess, to figure out exactly how they can go in there and collect what they need to get as quickly as possible. What remains there, most of the physical remains, the human remains, appear to have already been removed, but there's some pieces that still remain. I think whether it's just body parts or something like that, that's still there, so they need to collect that. They also need to really make, for the first time, a proper assessment of the debris from the plane and try and figure out what evidence they can gather to determine exactly how this thing came apart. There's also people's personal effects, which obviously they want to gather and figure out how to get back to their relatives.
Right. How long do they expect to be there? Anybody give a time frame?
There hasn't really been a set time frame because the situation is so in flux. What the team got there yesterday for the first time in some time, and they say they're going to go back again today and attempt to get to the site once again. But it's just a matter of really how can they, they're planning to bring like nearly 1,000 people to come and do this, scouring of these fields over this quite a large area. And how can they do it safely and, presumably as quickly as possible.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Lucas Albert. He's with us today from Moscow. We're talking about how crash investigators are back on the scene of that Malaysia Airlines jet downing in eastern Ukraine. There's been no official reason for the takedown of the plane, correct?
No, they have not. They're apparently still in the UK going over the data from the black boxes. They have not publicly revealed whatever they found on that.
And how significant is this rule that was passed that allows some of these investigators to be armed?
It really frees the hands of foreign investigators to come in and act as freely as they want to. I mean, it's an unusual situation in that the plane has crashed in Ukraine. Normally, in a situation like this, the country where the plane has gone down would sort of be the lead investigative body. But the Ukrainians, obviously recognizing the instability of the situation, have agreed to sort of cede that responsibility. But I guess the problem is for the investigators from Australia and from the Netherlands. They can't. They want to have some guarantees of safety for their people, and obviously they feel that they can't get that from the two warring parties. So they want to be able to bring in some of their own people.
Thanks, Lucas. Wall Street Journal reporter Lucas Albert with us this morning from Moscow. 13 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Friday morning. The World Health Organization is launching a $100 million campaign to bring the Ebola outbreak under control. The epidemic so far has killed more than 700 people, mostly in Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia. The UN agency, known as the WHO, said several hundred more medical personnel were needed in those three countries. In addition, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta says you should avoid all non-essential travel to those countries. Dr. Tom Frieden is head of the CDC.
Ebola in West Africa is worsening. We're responding by surging the CDC response so that we can help countries find patients, isolate them, stop spread, and prevent future cases.
Let's get the latest now from Lagos, Nigeria, where Wall Street Journal reporter Drew Henshaw is tracking the story. Drew, how bad is the outbreak?
Well, it's the worst Ebola epidemic in history. You're talking about one of the deadliest viruses on Earth, just raging its way through one of the worst healthcare systems on Earth. Guinea's healthcare system was rated absolute last in a World Bank report a few years ago, and they're dealing with a virus that is beatable. I mean, Ebola is not a super virus, but when you're working in a country that has barely enough hospital beds to begin with and where misinformation is pretty widespread, things get out of hand quick.
What does the disease actually do to the body?
Well, it's not as contagious. It's not airborne. It does take a pretty good level of contact with someone who has it in the stages when they actively have it to catch it. Once you catch it, after anywhere from 2 days to 21 days, things get pretty bad. You start with a fever, muscle aches, you know, easy to overlook type symptoms that are confused with something else. And pretty soon you can start bleeding internally or bleeding externally out of orifices, throwing up bile, terrible diarrhea. And those fluids are what gets the next person sick.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Drew Hinshaw in Lagos, Nigeria today on efforts to fight the Ebola epidemic. Estimates are now, what, more than 700 dead at this point, correct?
Right. I think the last number I saw was 729 people, according to the World Health Organization. And that number is almost certain to go up.
All right, and two, with Ebola, at least in Africa, the mortality rate is very high.
Yes, absolutely. You're talking about anywhere, but this current outbreak, about 60% of people who catch it die.
Wow.
And other outbreaks, it's been 90%. A lot of that is because people wait too long to go to the hospital, which is understandable in a country like Guinea or Liberia, where hospitals are far away and where they're really places where people go to die because there's not enough medical care there.
Thanks, Drew. Wall Street Journal reporter Drew Hinshaw from Lagos, Nigeria. 20 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is here. She has America's first news.
Good morning. Secretary of State John Kerry and UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon announced a three-day ceasefire between Israel and Hamas militants in Gaza. But there are reports again this morning of more violence in the area. The U.S. government has told airlines flying over Iraq to remain at higher altitudes amid growing concerns about carriers operating around conflict zones. The guidance follows the downing of Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in eastern Ukraine. As Ebola worsens in West Africa, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control is out with a travel warning for Americans. Dr. Thomas Frieden heads the CDC.
We also are today issuing a travel advisory recommending against non-essential travel to the West African nations of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone.
The agency is sending a team of experts to the region to help bring the outbreak under control. Frieden says Ebola is merciless, but that it can be overcome. In Chicago, police say a demoted worker shot and wounded his company's CEO before killing himself at the Bank of America building in the city's bustling financial district. Happened in an office in that building. Agriculture officials have issued the first major overhaul of the U.S. poultry inspection system in more than five decades. This is designed to better fight pathogens. The revamp places more trust in companies to protect their poultry's quality. Chrysler just reported its best July of sales since 2005, up 20% in the U.S. And it's Jobs Friday, economists expecting at least 235,000 created last month. Stock futures are trending lower this morning following a big sell-off yesterday. The Dow was down 317 points.
There's a lot of overseas news that's got people afraid. And summertime and the last day of July, I imagine there's a lot of window dressing going on.
Money manager Craig Hodges in Dallas. Quite a home run catch by a fan attending a San Francisco Giants game. The ball landed in a woman's beer, which didn't make it, but she was okay and given another beer, and the Giants went on to beat the Pirates.
You know, I saw that video. That missed hitting her face by about a foot.
Yeah.
Right?
We're glad she's okay.
I mean, in the seats she was sitting in, you know, you're a baseball person. I mean, you have to pay attention there.
You do.
She was not paying attention at all.
Well, especially, I mean, where you're sitting, you kind of have to know, okay, I'm sitting here, and this is one of those places that the ball could come right at me.
Yeah, she was in home run territory.
Somebody else that was with her had the glove.
Right. A bad job.
Near her, I should say.
A bad job by the Giants fans who failed to catch that ball, by the way. I mean, come on. They were surrounding her and couldn't catch it. 23 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. The Labor Department releases the July jobs report today. It's expected that for the 6th month in a row, the private sector will have added more than 200,000 jobs. A preview from Pat O'Keefe, Director of Economic Research at Cohn-Reznick in northern New Jersey. Pat, what are you expecting?
I expect fully that we will see another good number. We're looking for about 240,000 net new jobs in the month of July. That's a little bit above the consensus forecast, a little bit above where ADP's numbers for the private sector came out yesterday. But overall, this has been a year in which the recovery, the jobs recovery, has accelerated. And it's done so in a stutter step. We'll get a pickup 1 month, and then the next month's gain will be a little bit smaller. But overall, the first half of this year was the strongest first half we've seen since 1999, and expect that to carry over into the second half.
All right. The problem areas continue to be what? Work for at least young adults, right? Those are young and middle-aged adults or men.
Absolutely. The jobs recovery is complete. But when we look over on the labor force side, the number of people who either have jobs or are looking for jobs, we're at very low levels, and the non-participation has proven to be most pronounced among youth, those who are 16 through 24, and then those in their prime ages. That's where we've seen an awful lot of the tailing off. The older workers, those over 55, while their rate is down from their peak years, they're still participating at a higher level than historically has been the case. So what we're looking at is a number of new entrants and relatively new participants in the labor force who are or should be in the labor force who are not. And as a result, they're not getting the experience, they're not making the contacts, they're not acquiring the skills that will serve as a foundation for the rest of their adult years.
We're speaking with Pat O'Keefe. He's the Director of Economic Research at Cohn-Reznick in New Jersey, talking about the July jobs report. Peter Morici, business professor down at the University of Maryland, said that since the year 2000, I think I have this right, not a single new job has been created for, say, I think what he called like a first-level American, somebody who's been here since that time. He said every new job created since 2000 has gone to an immigrant. Not that Americans haven't gotten jobs, they have, but they've, I think what he meant is they've filled ones that have already existed. Would that make sense?
Well, I know Peter, and what he says always makes sense, but it isn't as readily apparent of the comparisons he's making. One way to look at, I think, the point Peter is making is that our labor force, the domestic labor force, has increased substantially since the turn of the century. Well, let's just take it since the recession began. We've added about 14 million work-age individuals in the to the U.S. economy, but only about one-fourth of that net increment shows up in the labor force statistics. In other words, people are turning of the age and entering into that age group, but they are not participating as robustly in the labor market as has been the case.
Thanks, Pat. That is Pat O'Keefe, Director of Economic Research and Cohn-Reznick in New Jersey. 30 minutes now after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Coming up next, a blow to public sector unions in Wisconsin. Is there a voice in your head saying you can do better with your finances? Well, know that you can do better. Save more for retirement and reduce costly broker and mutual fund fees with a free, easy, and secure tool called Personal Capital. In one place, Personal Capital aggregates all of your accounts like your 401k and IRA, shows how much you're overpaying in fees and how to reduce those fees. You also get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. That's the personal in Personal Capital. When you're ready, Personal Capital will assign an expert advisor to you to talk about how to make the most of your investments, both by helping to optimize your portfolio and reduce your fees. Take the first easy step. Go to personalcapital.com/WSJ to check if you're overpaying on your annual investment fees. Signing up takes just a minute. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make better investment decisions on the web or on your smartphone or tablet. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/WSJ. That's personalcapital.com/WSJ.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal this morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
Thanks for being with us on this Friday, August 1st. Gordon Deal with Gina Cervetti. Our top stories, a three-day ceasefire agreed to in Gaza appears to be falling apart. Deadly fighting has reportedly broken out not far from Malaysia Airlines Flight 17 in eastern Ukraine. And on a lighter note, the awkward moments awaiting Oakland A's fans during tomorrow's game. We'll have that report in about 20 minutes. A blow for public sector unions. The highest court in Wisconsin has upheld a law ending most collective bargaining rights for government employees in the state, a measure championed by Republican Governor Scott Walker. You might recall that the three-year-old law put Wisconsin at the center of a national debate over the role of public employee unions, especially in the wake of a recession that battered government finances. To Madison and Wall Street Journal reporter Mark Peters. Mark, take us through the ruling.
The ruling, to a large degree, likely closes the door on the legal fight over this highly controversial law that really rocked the state 3 years ago when it was passed, leading to protests and state reps moving, going to other states to avoid having to take votes, and the recall of Governor Scott Walker and several state legislators.
And what reasons did the justices give for upholding the law?
They broadly shot down most of the arguments that the unions made, saying it didn't violate basic constitutional rights. The interesting thing was the circuit court, which is the lower court below the Supreme Court in Wisconsin, had ruled the other way, basically saying that, yes, there were constitutional issues with the law and a good portion of it had to be thrown out. Now, on Thursday, the Supreme Court reversed that decision and upheld the law, saying it didn't violate kind of certain key constitutional rights, such as the right to assemble and others.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Mark Peters. So what's next for the union fight?
The unions have really been stymied at trying to fight this law over the last 3 years. They've exhausted most of the legal recourses they've tried to use. They've also found that the state legislature, which passed this, hasn't had much change politically, so they're having trouble getting the law changed anyway through the legislative process. And they're also finding that in the gubernatorial race, which is very close, in which Mr. Walker is being challenged by a Democrat, Mary Burke, they're finding that it's being talked about little in that race as well. So basically, they're starting to try to adapt to this new system, but it's really challenging for them because they've lost most of their rights to bargain. And there's other speed bumps that they have to overcome, such as having to have annual votes to recertify the unions, and they members can't have their wages deducted to pay union dues, and there's a variety of other challenges that have left unions to a large part much smaller than they were before Act 10, which is what the law is known as, was passed.
Could this have an effect on union battles in other states?
What happened in Wisconsin was a state Supreme Court ruling, so a lot of it is confined to that state. There's been talk about kind of the power of public sector unions, the role of public sector unions in other states. Part of what I think gave it power in Wisconsin is it came right after the recession when state governments and local governments across the country were really struggling to pay their bills. Now that the recession is behind us, their finances are more stable and may make it harder to justify a move like this by other states or other communities.
Thanks, Mark. Wall Street Journal reporter Mark Peters from Madison, Wisconsin. 21 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. Good Friday morning. By the way, don't forget to check out the new WSJ radio app. It brings the latest episodes of this program and all of your favorite Wall Street Journal radio shows right to your fingertips. You can download the WSJ radio app for iPhone and iPad at Apple's App Store for free. It's time now for our weekly look at what's trending on Google, a glimpse of the topics we've been searching for. From Google Trends expert Zaina Aston is with us live this morning. Zaina, before we talk about Sharknado 2, let me play this quick clip.
They're sharks. They're scary. No one wants to get eaten. But I've been eaten. And I'm here to tell you, it takes a lot more than that to bring a good man down.
All right, so a lot of interest in Sharknado 2, Zaina.
Oh, goodness, yes. So this is the sequel to the Sharks Meet Tornadoes TV movie, and it premiered on Wednesday on Sci-Fi, and it drove a social media frenzy. It sent people to search to find out more about the film and, of course, to try and see some trailers and also the clever tweets that have kind of been spawned from this film. You know, I think it's one of these disaster B-movies that is almost self-aware, and it's become this cult phenomenon where people are just fascinated by the Sharknado.
A record 4 million viewers, too. Not bad.
Yes, not bad at all. And, of course, the clips of the trailer on YouTube have millions of views. You know, there's an instant cult following. And a lot of brands have hopped on the Sharknado bandwagon and are using the power of the social media wave around this to really kind of get involved.
All right, so let's continue with TV trends here with America's Got Talent. What made that so popular the last few days?
Well, America's Got Talent kicked off its live results show this week, leading people to find out whether their favorite acts made it through to the next round. Also, you know, there is a new aspect to America's Got Talent where you can actually vote through Google search. So if you search for America's Got Talent during the live show when the polls are open, you can actually vote through that. So that also drove a spike in search as well.
Got it. That's the one with that Howie Mandel host, right? You get Howard Stern on there, Heidi Klum, Mel B. That the one?
Exactly. Yes, there are so many of those reality talent shows at the moment that it's hard to tell them apart. But
yes,
that is that one.
Very good. We're speaking with Google Trends expert Zaina Aston. She's with us live this morning, talking about what's been trending lately on Google. Also, newsman Brian Williams' daughter, who's an actress, right, just gets the role as Peter Pan.
Exactly. So she's the star of the TV program Girls. Her name's Allison Williams, and she's going to play Peter Pan in NBC's live telecast. This is a follow-on to their Sound of Music live telecast, and it's going to be broadcast on the 4th of December. She will join Christopher Walken, who was previously announced as Captain Hook. And in a lovely, heartwarming moment, it was actually her father, Brian Williams, who is the NBC News anchor, who reported the story of her playing this role. And he also used a cute childhood photo in the report, which is really lovely.
Very good. Also popular, the UCLA flood. Some of the images there were startling.
Exactly. People took to search to find images of this and to find just how much infrastructure was damaged as a result of the water main break that leaked 20 million gallons of drinking water across the campus and the surrounding LA area. Apparently, that water main was over 90 years old. I didn't even know we had water mains that were 90 years old.
That's part of a big problem, I think, in the infrastructure in Los Angeles in general. Zaina, thanks for a few minutes, as always. Google Trends expert Zaina Aston with us live. 15 minutes now before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
Powered by the most trusted name in journalism. Wake up to the Wall Street Journal this morning. Now on the WSJ radio app.
Thanks for joining us. Here's something that will either make you sick to your stomach or make you want to destroy your smartphone with a sledgehammer. At a security conference next week in Las Vegas, teams of people will demonstrate things like new ways to take over the latest iPhone and how apps can steal user data using Google's Android operating system, although a patch has been issued for that bug. Wall Street Journal reporter Danny Yadrin says smartphones have become the next frontier in cybersecurity. Danny, what do we have here?
You know, both researchers and hackers have realized that that phone you carry around that's in your pocket, in your purse, sort of with you at all times, is really more of a computer masquerading as a phone these days. You know, this is nothing new. Apple introduced the iPhone several years ago. BlackBerries have been around for a long time. But what we've seen in the past year is, you know, smartphones have gone from a luxury device to something that is ubiquitous, and it presents some very unique security challenges that are different from your typical computer. For one, you know, this is something that is always connected to the internet, and it also holds a lot of personal information on you. Now, some of the researchers presenting at the Black Hat Security Conference in Vegas next week are showing how they basically constructed a fake cell tower, which could in theory then be used to, you know, either turn on your phone's microphone, you know, read its contact lists, or read text messages.
One problem is that people might not know that their phone has been hacked, right?
I mean, the thing they most recommend is you stay up to date with your phone's software. So, you know, if Apple is pushing out an update for the operating system, consider that a must download. Don't think of that as a luxury, you know, you can get to when you feel like it. The same goes for, you know, updates to Android and things like that.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Danny Yadrin. Would it be fair to say that we've largely ignored the security concerns with our phones as we've mostly focused on computers?
Exactly, and that's definitely something folks are dealing with now, and that's because, you know, we're just getting to a point where, you know, we are thinking of our smartphone as basically a tiny computer, and that's really how it should be thought of. In fact, it's much more powerful than the computer you had 10 years ago. And so now that we're sort of thinking at it as such, you know, security, unfortunately, tends to be an afterthought with technology.
Dan, of course, we have plenty of information on our phones that hackers would want to get their hands on, right?
That's for sure. I mean, it is something we, you know, I myself, you know, use for mobile banking, credit card payments these days. One of the groups that wants to use some of the technology we're talking about here, you know, our law enforcement and, you know, government intelligence agencies, because it's an effective way to conduct surveillance on suspects. Now, to be clear here, this is not something you could do on a massive scale. It is for, you know, very targeted or specific individuals. It is way too labor-intensive to, you know, go and gather information from everyone's cell phone.
Thanks, Danny. Wall Street Journal reporter Danny Yadrin. 8 minutes before the hour now on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Gina Cervetti is back with America's First News.
Good morning. Gaza officials said today that at least four Palestinians were killed by Israeli tank fire after Israel and Hamas began observing a ceasefire. An Israeli army spokesman said the military was looking into the latest incident. Ukrainian government forces said today that pro-Russian separatists killed at least 10 Ukrainian paratroopers overnight in the area near the site where Malaysia Air Flight 17 was brought down, killing 298 people. The U.S. Senate has cleared the way to fund highway and mass transit projects through next May, agreeing to a bill passed by the House and sending the measure to President Barack Obama. He has indicated that he will sign it. Today brings the July jobs report, and economists expect at least 235,000 new ones, the jobless rate down to 6%. The latest jobless claims report showed that 23,000 and more people sought benefits last week.
We'd like to look at the four-week average, especially in July, and it fell another 3,500 below 300,000. So I think the basic message is here is the labor markets are continuing to improve.
Bob Melman with J.P. Morgan Chase. Stock futures are not improving this morning. They're quite negative following a sell-off to end the month. The Dow down more than 300 points and erasing the year's gains. Biggest loser in July, United Technologies. The strongest performer was Intel. Tropical Storm Bertha is the season's second named storm with maximum winds near 45 miles per hour. A tropical storm watch was up for Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. T-Mobile gets a surprise bidder. French telecom operator Iliad offers $15 billion in cash for almost 57% of the U.S. carrier. This comes amid a slow-moving potential pairing up of Sprint and T-Mobile. Hey, what's this guy's secret? Robert Hamilton of Indianapolis just won his second $1 million lottery prize in less than 3 months. The Hoosier Lottery says that both times he played the $120 million cash spectacular scratch-off.
Okay, can we now prevent him from playing anymore? Because he literally is sucking millions from others who might want to win this jackpot.
He's making the rest of us feel bad. The odds of winning just once are one in more than 2 million.
And he's done it twice now.
In 3 months.
In 3 months. Wow, just rolling.
Most of us won't do that once in our whole life,
exactly.
Right?
Jeez. Thank you, Gina. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Thanks for being with us. A blockbuster trade in baseball has led to an awkward moment for a marketing department. You may have heard that the Oakland Athletics traded outfielder Yoenis Cespedes to the Boston Red Sox for all-star pitcher John Lester and outfielder Johnny Gomes. Lester will make his first start for Oakland tomorrow against the Royals, but here's the twist. Tomorrow is a promotional day at the Coliseum, and the giveaway for A's fans is a La Potencia t-shirt featuring the likeness of Yoenis Cespedes. La Potencia means the power in Spanish and recognizes Cespedes for his contributions to back-to-back American League West titles. That's the spin, since the promotional dates are set before the season starts. They couldn't have known he was going to be traded. How's that for pressure, by the way, for when Lester takes the mound? 10,000 Oakland fans tomorrow will be wearing the t-shirt of a fan favorite you just replaced. For Gina Cervetti, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. Is there a voice in your head saying you can do better with your finances? Well, know that you can do better. Save more for retirement and reduce costly broker and mutual fund fees with a free, easy, and secure tool called Personal Capital. In one place, Personal Capital aggregates all of your accounts, like your 401k and IRA, shows how much you're overpaying in fees and how to reduce those fees. You also get tailored advice on optimizing your investments. That's the personal in Personal Capital. When you're ready, Personal Capital will assign an expert advisor to you to talk about how to make the most of your investments, both by helping to optimize your portfolio and reduce your fees. Take the first easy step. Go to personalcapital.com/WSJ to check if you're overpaying on your annual investment fees. Signing up takes just a minute. Personal Capital gives you total clarity and transparency to make better investment decisions on the web or on your smartphone or tablet. To set up your free account, go to personalcapital.com/WSJ. That's personalcapital.com/WSJ. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal this morning. For more, follow the Wall Street Journal this morning on Facebook and Twitter, and now on TuneIn.